Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is World Form Zen Fighting Champion John Chung, and you are listening to the AMAA Legends and Pioneers Radio Blog Show with Professor Gary Lee and the Sport Karate Museum Archives, protecting the history, one warrior at a time. Enjoy.
Aloha, everyone, and welcome to the AMA Masters Radio Show. We've got a jam-packed show for you tonight, one I've been wanting to do for quite a while, and I'm real excited about it, and I'll be bringing on my guests in just a few minutes, and we'll be talking about each one. And we want you to know we appreciate you letting us come into your home on a Tuesday evening and sharing sport karate history and martial artists in general. And, you know, we have a heart of our show. And before we start, I'd like to just share that with you. Part of our show is the Who's Who in the Martial Arts book. Now, this book was created a few years back by Jen Wallendorf and Dale Brooks. And, you know, they had actually two editions. I was actually in both of them. The first one was a brown and white hardcover book, and then the second one was a blue cover book. And it was really exciting. It was my first advertisement into the media. And it's my actually first advertisement. Well, years went by, and I didn't really hear about it until a few years back. And I got a call from Mr. Joe Corey. He said there's a young man, and he was, you know, he's a young man to me, was reviving the book, and I wanted to find out more about it. His name was Hansi Jesse Bowen. And he ended up being one of the students of Mr. Dale Brooks and Jan Wallendorf. And he revised the Who's Who in the Martial Arts, and he did something really great. He put a banquet behind it. He added a ring, a beautiful plaque that goes along with your induction, and surrounds it with an incredible event that's happening this year at August 3rd. We'll be talking about that a little bit later. But the Who's Who book is it's really a cool book because what it does, it tells the story of individuals in America that created martial arts. And if you'd like to find more about it, more information, go to Amazon.com or you can go to Barnes & Noble. Go to Century. That's right. Go to Century and they have it also. And you know, just find out about what really makes this book work. And it's really fascinating about the people and the stories that are in it. And I just wanted to share that with you before we even started. So, you know, we've got a really great show tonight. And the show is basically, you know, a league. That's right. How many leagues are there in America? Well, there's all kinds of leagues. And this is one of the longest running successful sport karate leagues in America. You know, it went in the early 1990s. It has survived over two decades of positive attitude and support for some of the best champions of sport karate. You know, criticism over the years it has established that their champions, well, they're called winners. How they received that championship, that's one of the things we'll talk about. You know, in the beginning, it was a national championship. And then in 1993 in New Orleans, it was declared a world championship. But their first championship, gold ring, and a status that came along with that win. So I would recommend looking at that first world breaking championship, beating Bob Gammardini by 1/10 of a point. And I stayed as a commentator for the Super Bowl for 10 years. You know, I was inducted in the NBO Texas Flatball Hall of Fame, became the arbitrator for Texas for 2 years, and accumulated almost 14 NBO awards throughout the years of dedication. However, the league has changed over the years, and it has changed since those early years, good and bad. And it's changed even more with the founder, you know, Boyce Liddell, giving and making Jeff Doss the president of the NBO last year. You know, what is happening now? What direction is the NBO going? And what are the changes that Mr. Doss will add? You know, inquiring minds, we really want to know. You know, Jeff Doss brings a lot to the table. You know, growing up in the NBO, I'm the only competitor in black belt forms to win five, now I'll say it again, five super grand world championships, never to be duplicated again. And he has turned in super grand slam, Grand Slam karate tournament, a premier karate event in America. You know, Mr. Daryl Stewart, you know, he took my place in Texas as the arbitrator, and he's been doing it for 20 years. He's a pioneer karate fighter, and he was not called Bigfoot for just surfing. Trust me on that. And, you know, NBL Super Grand's referee legend across America. You know, he's been there from the beginning also. You know, Mr. Billy Sweeney, I don't think he's going to be on tonight. But, you know, he's been the NBL medic for quite a few years. We really wanted his input, too. We couldn't find him. But you know what? I did find someone who was there from the very beginning. You know, he's actually a competitor now, an actual national world champion. And he was a world champion and national champion for the NBL. And I'm talking about Mr. Dean Pyles. You know, this is a competitor of high standards. And, you know, he was there in the early years also, as I said, and will share his opinion to make things better. That's right. Mr. Jeff Doss, Mr. Stewart, and Mr. Pyles are history generals for the Sport Quality Museum Archives, you know, in Sugarland, Texas. You know, this is a discussion where we were at in the beginning, where we're at now, and where are the new president, Jeff Doss, and what are the new goals to make it stronger and better for the competitor that decides to follow the National Flatboat League. I want you to enjoy this project, an exclusive interview with three of the top people, top individuals are right there today in sport martial arts. Mr. Jeff Doss, Mr. Daryl Stewart, and Mr. Dean Pyles. Are we on the air, guys? Are you there?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. Here.
Good. Did Jeff make it yet?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Do you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can. Hey, Jeff, how was your show tonight, buddy?
It was pretty good. I had a couple of hiccups. Was trying to add Brian Arrington up on my call, and my phone kept dropping it. But we had a lot of followers tonight, and just let everyone know about some exciting events coming up. So
absolutely, I hope they're listening right now, because you know this is a show that's been in my mind to do for a long time, and I think just because of things that happened last year. It just made things happen that we can actually have this interview. Now, you guys that are listening, which is Mr. Pyles, Mr. Stewart, and Mr. Doss, if I'm wrong in any way, correct me after I get done. I'm going to kind of walk people who are listening to understand how it all began and how it started. And I won't go in depth, but I'll hit some bullet points. You know, in the beginning, there was an idea to form a national league in America. And honestly, this all started with NASCA, and that was a different group that won the copycat NASCAR racing. That was the idea in the beginning. And then there was a turmoil. Whoever had the turmoil had the turmoil, and it was broken up. And one person broke away from that, and that person was a man named Horst Liddell. And he formed the National Black Belt League. Now, a lot of people didn't agree with what he was doing. A lot of people didn't understand what he was doing, but he did it. In Niagara Falls, created something really cool, an idea of a new league. And then in 1991 in San Jose, and I believe the winner of the overall Superlands with E.J. Fogle that year, he created something really cool. He created a national idea of a national league and formed it really powerful in 1992. And this is where I met most of you guys in 1992 in Atlantic City when I first experienced the National Black Belt League. I'll never forget it. It was incredible. Five national titles. And this is really cool that all of us from Texas were there to represent it. And the following year, I got to represent the NBL as the first Texas national team with an incredible group of people. So I've been here from the beginning. I understand what it was, and I understand what you guys have been there from the beginning. But here we're at now. We're right now in 2018, and we've overcome a lot of things with Jeff Doss being the new president. The very first question I want to ask, what is your vision for change? And what have you decided to do to make those changes happen this year?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So first, I want to, do you hear me all right? I just want to make sure I can.
Yes, sir.
All right. So first off, I just want to make sure. So my title for this is the NBL president of the USA. All right. So what we are trying to do is eventually have presidents in other countries and things. And that is our main goal, is that we've been doing this for 28 years, and we still it's mostly America, Canada, somewhat Canada, Mexico really big, Guatemala have always been really big supported. And, you know, so it's more been of a North American type thing with, from year to year, some teams from Ireland and some teams from here and there. And we do get, you know, international competition. But the goal is to really get NBL in other countries. So this has changed so many different times over the past 2 years on what my role was going to be and what my title was going to be. So right now I'm the USA president for the NBL, but Boyce and I are partners in the SKIL. So we both run SKIL together. And so my goal is to help, you know, grow the league and, you know, throughout the year to, so that way we can have better support at Super Grands. Boyce is still, you know,
that's the next question, Jeff. Who is in charge of Super Grands still? Boyce still in charge of Super Grands? Or
yes,
you have a
say-so? Yes, Boyce is in charge of Super Grands. Now, does that mean that I don't have a big, you know, right now the way it is, anything that Boyce does, he kind of runs it by me. So we are a team. We work together. Same thing with David Marquez and same thing with, you know, with Edgar and those guys down there, Salvador, the guys in Guatemala that we are working with. So, we're trying to, you know, it's a team. So
super. And that's where you decide what you want to do and make it better. Now, I want to confront something that happened Christmas, which was this year's Super Grands. And, you know, people don't realize I've known you since you were 9 years old. I respect you. You're one of my youngest history generals for the Sport Club Museum. A lot of deep respect between you and I. And I did write a statement at Christmas after Super Grand because I saw one of my friends win a world championship, and it affected me not so much that he won it, and I was really proud of him, but I noticed there was no spectators there. There was nobody there to really watch. Felt for him, not so much that there wasn't people there to watch him. It was weird not to see a couple people there. And I was wondering what happened. Well, I realized better. But one of the things that I researched was that in the past few years, you've had Super Grands in this location. And one of the neat things that people were calling me on and email me on to ask questions on, what made Super Grands so cool? Maybe Daryl can throw his statistics over this. What made it so cool was every year we didn't really know where it was going to be at until time to be able to get our plane fare and get there. And it was exciting to know it would bounce around the country. Is that going to come back? Is it going to bounce it around the country again?
So there's always some, you know, difficulty with that. I mean, just running a tournament year to year in the same place is tough enough, right? Especially a week-long event. So it's the goal. Well, again, it has been in three different locations over the past 3 years. So it has always been bounces around, and it still does. It is tough, though, with it being, just an event to make sure that, because as soon as you move it away from where you live, that's a big extra, you know, amount, right? So trying to make sure that we are solid. My goal is to pretty much have, like, 4 spots that we go back and forth. You know, I think that would be a good thing. That way we have an idea of how it should be set up at all these locations, and then we just kind of rotate, you know.
How do you feel about that? I know that it's a big deal. You've been doing it for 20 years. Every Christmas, which is, now, I understand why it's a Christmas, but every Christmas you leave your family and you're there at Christmas Day. I know it's like clockwork. Is that exciting for you, or is that as a betrayal?
Well, no, it's exciting to me in that aspect. I get to see all my friends that I hadn't got to see all year and work with, and work with all these famous people. And as I always say, I'm just a janitor, and I go there just to do my part. But to be there and be with all the kids and the parents that come from all over to the NBL and Skill Super Grand World Games to compete, show their skills from their country, their city, their state, and wherever. And it's always fun for me. And my wife always wishes me good and say, have a good time. I know you're going to be working hard. And we always come home and worn out, yeah. So it's fun for me.
That's a good answer. Well, Dean, I've been saving you for the last because I don't want your viewpoint as a competitor, as I was, and also Mr. Doss was. But, you know, as a competitor, what year did you start competing in the NBL exactly?
It was probably 1994. I mean, we went to some of the competitions when it was national championship.
Okay, 1994. Now, you saw that in the beginning. You had to get your hotel room. You had to fly there or drive there. But you had an entry fee of, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was $75. Jeff? What was it back then?
Yeah, it was about $75.
That's about that. Yes, sir. Yeah, it's about that. It's probably like 79, 80, 89 now. So it hasn't really changed that much over the time, actually.
No, it's gone up. I know. It's not something we can share. I mean, it's $99. And then if you don't get the hotel room, it goes up, correct?
Right. If you're not able, if you don't do stay at the hotel, then you have a higher fee. Yes. Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, because Boyce, the only way he's able to get that hotel, that venue, is by guaranteeing, a certain amount of rooms or to sell out the hotel. So that is just, when you're trying to be at a hotel for 3 weeks, because people don't realize he's there for a week before to set up, and then at least a week after the event to tear down. So when you want to take up that, then you have to offer them a lot. That's why I think a lot of people don't understand about this is the business part of it. There, it's a lot different.
Okay, so the average person that goes to Supergrands and has got a seat for Supergrands, Dean, you had to put aside for 5 days hotel, and you had to
right.
Did you fly or drive?
Most of the time we drove.
Okay, so we'll add $200 for gas. Let's add another $300 for food. I'm just talking about yourself, okay, for a week. That's $500. So, you're looking at least a $3,000 to $5,000 excursion for one competitor just because they got a seed there. Was it worth it to you? I mean, if they ask me the question, I'm going to say yes. But I'm going to ask you because you're a different competitor, a different level. Was it worth it to you to be able to put that money aside and save for super grants every year?
I mean, in the beginning, absolutely it was. I mean, I bled the NBL. I believed in the NBL wholeheartedly, and I was there, all the time doing all kinds of stuff. So for me, actually, it was. My kids grew up. That's where their Christmas was. I mean, until, they were older. I mean, so, yeah, for me, absolutely it was worth it.
So it was worth it. Now, Jeff, I want to go back to ask you a question. As growing up in the NBL, and like I said, I didn't brag about you. That's a fact. You won 5 Super Grand World Championships. You must have seen something.
Sir.
You must have seen something that you realize now in the position you are that you can help change, and that maybe Mr. Liddell, yes, he does, I'm sure, made mistakes, but he also did really good things. But the mistakes that he made, did you see some things that you think could change? And the new president?
Well, I think for me, it's just providing someone different for people to communicate with and talk to, a different perspective. And, for me, I know I didn't really, my goals for the league this year and over the next, really the next 5 years, is education. Letting people understand, because our league is very complex. I don't think people understand how complex it is. And really, there isn't another league like it. So, again, I think when people are saying you're comparing to this and compare to this, it's hard to do that because the league is still different. There's so many different conferences and nationals and regionals and things and a lot of different possible paths to get the super grants for different people, which is great because it doesn't limit it on you on how to get there, And you can still wild card and that's in itself is – something remarkable to accomplish. So, I mean, I think it's
Let me explain that wild card. It means that, and tell me if I'm wrong, that means anybody without having seeding or points in the NBL can play as a wild card, work their way up through that division, and have like their own tournament. And they went first place in their own little division that goes in as a wild card. Then they can be placed into the regular division, correct?
Right, pretty much. You're pretty much saying you're going to go first out of the whole division. Is what I've done it a couple of times.
And Chris Paglio did that. 17-5.
Yeah. Now I've seen some in fighting to do it. I've tried to do it. I tried to do it once in continuous, and I got third. And that was a crazy one. I'll never do that again in continuous. That was insane.
Wait a minute. Jeff. Wait a minute, you fought continuous?
Yes, sir. I've actually been on stage several times at Super Grants for continuous fighting.
I was actually
on stage for continuous more before I was for four.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, Gerald, I got to ask you a question, man, and this is a good one. Can you win too much? I know Dean's going to add his 2 cents on this. Gerald, can you win too much in the NBL? I mean, can you win so much where the judges get tired of seeing you win and they start giving you low scores?
Well, you know, there's there's always somebody that's going to say that judges give you a low score, and you know they're going to try to pay off the judges. Well, let me.
Is it
hard to pay me off? I don't believe you could pay me off to give somebody a lower score or anything
Darryl,
like that.
Darryl, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about is there sometimes a conspiracy of a good old boy syndrome? Dean, throw your 2 cents in, buddy.
Well, I mean, this is the thing that we have to look at, okay? This before Jeff takes over, I mean, is taking over, and I think that if anybody's capable of bringing the NBL back around, it'll be Jeff, because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, I'm here on the show to be a devil's advocate. They got one foot in the grave, but I think that in the past, the good old boy system was a thing, and that's not just me saying that. That is proven over and over, and the reason why I say that is because not only the NBL has lost some of its top competitors, not only that, they've lost some of their top promoters. And the reason why is because of the way they were treated. And, I mean, I hate to say that, but that's why I'm on the show to put the devil's advocate. But, I mean, I got much love for everybody. You know, I'm just doing my part.
Well, I appreciate your opinion. Jeff, you want to counter that?
What was that last part you said? Because of what? Say that again.
I just said that you know, not now, not, you know, I mean, I can't speak for the way it is right now or how it's been the last few years because I've been competing on NASCA, but I can say as a competitor that I know that, you know, I compete against the same top level competitors that I used to compete against in the NBL, which are now on NASCA. And the reason why is because of the way we were treated in the NBL, and not just us, but promoters as well. Now, you know, like I said, if there's anybody that can turn it around, it's you. But my job is to play devil's advocate and just point out, you know, the bad and the ugly.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, and I think no matter what, I think every league you can hear that same thing. So I've competed in several different leagues as well, and I've felt, you know, I feel the same way about that, and I've experienced those same, you know, issues that maybe you've experienced at the NBL. I've experienced it in other leagues. I'm not going to mention any other names, but for me, what we do as the league better than anyone else is at least there are no seeds throughout the year. You know, you have to earn your way from tournament to tournament to tournament, and you know, we don't have promoters judging, and so that is already the first step that we can do to try to make sure that it's a fair system. You know,
I think a lot in the past it was a lot of promoters judging and team coaches judging, and I think that's where a lot of that come in. It wasn't so much that people were trying to cheat. I think it was more that if another team was beating their players, they kind of got even. It's just when you add in human nature, sometimes, unfortunately, that's the outcome. You know, I feel like it's not that anybody wants to deny it. I mean, I competed in California just a few weeks ago, and I got third place, and I absolutely deserved third place. I mean, I went back and looked at the video. I mean, the judges hit it spot on. I mean, I had two places where I wobbled, and you know, they nailed me on it, and, you know, I have no problem with that. So you're not going to win every time, even being a top-level competitor. But
you know, one of the things I'd like to say, Dean and Jeff, is that the unique thing about the NBL, and I picked up on this the third year, I believe, 1993, was that, you know, Boy Slidell had the vision of the judges to do something real special. I mean, I remember a time when you competed in a tournament and, you know, it's a kung fu tournament, and there's three kung fu judges and one karate judge, and then there's five kung fu competitors, one karate guy, and, of course, kung fu guy wins. Well, who says they cheat? Who says that? But Boyce had a great idea. He would bring in judges from all across the country. He would pay their way, take care of them, feed them, put them in a hotel room, And all he requests them to do is go to a meeting every morning before they go up and work and be fair. Know the rules. And Daryl, you've been doing that for 20 years. That system works. Doesn't it, Jeff and Daryl?
Oh, absolutely. The judges have to go to a meeting, and Ms. Files knows that. We have to go to meetings, and we're there for 3 hours continuously going over rules. Now, are we all perfect? No, there's no way that everybody can be perfect. And you know, it's a judge's perception on a lot of things. So what I see one way, I might give a little higher score, and you might look at it another way from your perspective, and you say, well, I'm going to give him a lower score. Now, I've seen what Mr. Piles is talking about in a bunch of leagues, because I don't just work with the NBL. I work with a bunch of different leagues. And so, yeah, that can happen, but the judges do have to go.
Oh, no, don't. Yeah, go ahead, Mr.
Well, I was going to say the judges go to a meeting every day. Every day that they're there at Superfan, they go to a three-hour meeting before they ever go to the floor. And so, you know, they're giving their all to try to do the best they can.
Right, and I'm not saying that as personal as just me that I feel like that I was cheating. But I've seen the same thing in several leagues also. I mean, even out in California, you know, then the competition just a few weeks ago. I mean, I've seen the same thing. Local judges sometimes will score the local people better, which that just happened. But what I'm saying is that. In the beginning in the NBL, competing in the NBL, I seen Boyce's vision, and it was good, the way he had it, and the rules that he had it by. And if the judges judged by the rules, it's not their perception of what they see, it's the rules. And I think Jeff will agree to that because he's if I'm competing, I don't want your opinion judging me. I want the rules judging me. And
right
I think
there.
That a lot of times people would throw their opinion in, and I think that is where it got to hurt in the NBL the most.
And that could be.
Right.
Yeah,
and,
I'm
and,
no doubt about that.
Can I say something about what's
great.
Done to eliminate that?
Jeff's trying to say, yeah, Jeff, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah. Can I say something? All right, so that is where Boyce and I and several other promoters have actually stepped in and kind of rechange the judging system, and some judges like it, some don't, because it makes it a little bit more work for them. But we have an actual sheet and you know, that makes it, and you can look on the NBL page and everything, and it is where you have to give a score of 20 to 25 for, you know, whatever the criteria is. And that is, so there's four different things of criteria. And you have to give it on one part. So, like, say it's creative forms, right? So one is for the basics. The other is for the entertainment value. The other is for, I think, difficulty. And the other one is for the execution. So that way, you say someone who's maybe a traditional judge that, or maybe just, you know, doesn't like the flips or doesn't like this or that, they still have to give a score based on what they're judging for, you know what I mean? Now
right,
again,
do,
what yeah, and that's what we've been doing, and it's a little bit different, and I really like it. I think it's one of the best systems because it actually makes it where we are scoring the competitors and not just picking who we like more. And I think that's what the problem is, and I think that's with every league, and it's more of a system similar to like gymnastics. You know,
Dean, that new scoring sheet that you're talking about, Jeff, I like it too. I've kind of gotten used to it now. It's difficult at first, but after you use it for a few times, it is a lot better. I think it's better.
Hey guys, hey Dean, hey Daryl, doesn't that sound like Cotter Wars a little bit?
Yep.
Yeah, it does. And you know,
give
this is
break.
The thing. Everybody that knows me knows that during the NBL, I always carried the full NBL rule book, and I knew that rule book and still do inside and out. I mean, I love rules. I'm a competitor. I want to compete inside the confines of whatever we're doing, even though, you know, I'm known as a Valley Tudo fighter and where there's no rules. But when I'm competing where there's rules, I want to be judged on the rules, and I try to adhere to those rules. And I think that if you're a competitor, that's what you want to be, you know. And you want to be judged on the rules, not the opinion. That, you know, that's all I'm saying.
Right.
Okay,
well,
sure.
Okay, I'm back. Listen, I've got you three guys together, and we've got a little, you know, we got three opinions here. I want to throw a question at you, and I want you to discuss it between the three of you. Okay. Every year, everybody works toward the goal of getting a seed for Super Grants, and one of the motivations was that magazine that he had. It disappeared a few years ago. Why? Where'd it go? And that was such a motivation for so many people. I was just spending the afternoon with Mr. Willie Hicks, who's one of the few guys, well, the only guy that won four world championships like you, Jeff. You won four, you won five and four, but you weren't even fighting. And
him and Regina won four.
Mr. Lee, get on the show tonight, emphasize the fact that I wanted to be on that magazine. You know what? It didn't bother me that I shared it with Josh Durbin because I looked up to him. You know, as a kid, I just wanted to be on that magazine. And I just had a little spot on it, but I made it finally. Where'd it go? What happened to it?
Do you want me to answer that one?
Well,
I'll go first.
Motivational tool to get to compete in your tournament.
So, right. So 2010, I think, was the last time the magazine was around. I think what happened was Boyce had spread himself too thin because he was doing all that on his own. And he had lost a lot of tournaments and he had the magazine, but he only had about, you know, maybe 20 tournaments or 25.
Don't you agree that's the motivation for a lot of competitors though? Do you see their name in the ratings?
Gary, I understand that. But I'm just explaining to you the way it was from there. After he dropped that, like the league grew for the next 4 years and got more. So that is where he said, all right, my focus is on this and sanctioning tournaments and getting more, you know. And what people forget is that 2012, 2013, 2014 were three of the biggest Super Grands we've ever had. Charleston was insane how big it was. And not just NBL, but SKIL was probably it is the biggest SKIL Super Grands we ever had. So that's where his focus was. Now, several of us have tried to do something and get together and do a magazine, and honestly, it just didn't work. None of us could do it like Boyce did. There's still some, paths, you know, to do that. You know, Peter Chase was working on something before that was kind of NBL-focused, and it was a good magazine. It was just different, you know. I think all of us have different ideas on what we should do next, but yes, the magazine was what got me involved in the NBL, is what let me, you know, because I wasn't competing in the NBL, but I was competing in NASCAR, actually, and but I read the NBL magazine all the time, and I knew, you know, pretty much everything about everything.
The magazine motivated people to get involved with the NBL, so that pretty much shows it might have kind of helped deteriorate the people getting involved. Daryl, how do you feel about that?
Oh, yeah, I think the magazine definitely would help it. But like you say, you got to have the financial backing to be able to do that and try to grow the league. And so, you know, until they come up with financial backing again, you know, and maybe it can come back. You know, maybe Boyce can get it back together or Jeff.
If someone else has to do it. It has to be someone else that's involved. And so that's what we've been working on these next over the past few years, is getting someone to focus on media only and an NBL kind of focused media. You know, there's so many different things that we have going on that are ideas and stuff. So it's hard to say all of them, but.
Hey, listen, it's just like this too. Even for the, arbitrators and stuff for the state and the commissioners for the state. It was good for them too because it gave them a little bit of notoriety out in front of the league to say, you know. So that was good for them too. I think, you know. I mean, I enjoyed seeing my picture in the NBL book, just like the kids did.
Right. I agree with that.
Dean, did you ever make the cover?
Yes, I think that the NBL magazine was an awesome thing, but here again, you know, I'm on the show to be kind of be the devil's advocate.
Just say it.
Let me get it out. Okay, so you said, you know, y'all said that the magazine was a good thing, but Boyce lost funding because he lost several promoters. This is where I go back to why did the NBL, because it was so big at one time and everything was working so good, why do you feel like that the NBL all of a sudden lost most of its top athletes as well as its top promoters? I mean, Billy Viola, Bob Liker, John Shark. I mean, the list goes on and on. Dewey Earwood, it goes on and on. They lost, you know, Corky Sykes' tournament was even gone. Brian Penn's tournament. Why do you feel like what all of a sudden imploded on the NBL that made everyone leave? Now, I feel like my opinion, and I talked to a lot of people that, you know, are top level competitors, was and are, and we all agree the same thing is that, you know, we just felt like that the league itself, meaning mainly boys, just did not care about the competitors or the promoters. So what went wrong to change it to where all of a sudden Boyce lost all his funding to have the magazine if it was such a good idea? That's my question.
Well, I think a lot of times, you know, everybody wants to be the top dog, and if we can't do it my way, well, I'll just go and I'll start another league.
Exactly.
Oh, hey.
That's what happens.
I know all about them kind of people. You know, I know all about them kind of people. That's called egomaniac, and they're the guys that's got to be out front. But what I'm saying is, okay, I know that Jeff. I know Jeff. You know, like Professor Gary Lee and Mr. Stewart. Yeah, I watched Jeff grow up also. I think a lot of Jeff. So you know what I'm saying. I feel like Jeff could maybe turn that around, but you know what. Besides just that, I mean, everybody can't have an ego. I mean, I certainly didn't leave because I felt like I wouldn't get to be top dog because I was winning NBL world titles when I left. I mean, I just won an NBL world championship when I decided, you know, the NBL is just not for me anymore. This is not where I fit in. It's just I didn't feel like the league cared. And then after that, a lot of the top promoters left. That's what I'm saying. I think that it can be turned around. I'm just saying, you know, what happened at that time.
Let me stop you. Jeff, so
yes.
He's making a point here, which I'd like to dwell on a little bit. Some of the top promoters who are the top promoters in the world right now did leave the NBL. Why do you feel the reason they did?
So, all right, well, I mean, all those are over. I mean, we're talking about some of those over 20 years, right? So, that's a long span.
Well, not Corky,
you know,
and Brian, and Sharon.
Well, hold on. So when you're talking about Dewey and those guys, that was back when all the national promoters kind of got together and, you know, wanted certain things or whatever, you know. But from there, then all the regional promoters, you know, got built up. A lot of people, honestly – it's not just the NBL. It's a lot of leagues. A lot of people are just not doing bigger tournaments anymore. Brian Penna still runs a tournament, and actually he still supports the NBL and likes the NBL. Corky still goes to tournaments and supports the NBL. Ron Ferguson supports the NBL. All these guys are NBL, but they don't do tournaments. Brian does a tournament at his karate school, you know, and that's what he wants to focus on is that.
Well, you know,
and
what about
so,
people like Billy Paula, Ron Kane, Infinity Nationals?
Well,
that's
a whole other thing. That's a whole other situation. And everyone has different opinions and different, you know, there. You know, that's a whole other thing. And, again, you know, some of that goes with certain people not getting their way, and some of that goes with just disagreements. I mean, and I'm not going to speak for, you know, Billy or Ron or any of those guys.
Let me ask you a question, though. Now, in the beginning, there was NASCA, there was NBL, and it was just getting off the branch of the USKA, which is their power. Then, of course, the USKF came in about. And so I'm saying there was like three or four different organizations that people had to choose from. Now, it's crazy. You've got SMART, you got Waco, you got WKC, WKA, WQU. I mean, got all these different groups. How do you compare yourself now to all these different groups, and what makes the NBL better in the future?
So here's two things, okay? I'm going to focus on the NBL. The NBL needs to focus on the NBL, not trying to keep up with this league or this league. Again, we should be happy with what we are doing and the format we have and work on how to grow it and make it better for the NBL and the people who want to do it. Two, there's always ways for us to work together, and that's kind of what I'm doing now is working with other leagues and trying to find ways for us to work together, not just trying to compete with this or that. Luis Jimenez is a perfect example. You know, he has the WKU Pan Ams as well as the NBL Regional. We are working together, lightly with that league right now and trying to see where that goes. There's some other things in the making as well. So, I mean, I think that, working together, being open-minded, and because, again, you know, the more we all just divide, we're just going to kill our sport.
Love that answer. And with that answer, I'm going to take a small break. Please stay on the line, Mr. Piles, Mr. Stewart, and Mr. Doss. This has been a great show, and we're going to come back and do some more questions just when I finish doing some sponsor rating. So I appreciate you guys, so stay tuned. Okay, guys?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. I'll be right back. Hey, we're sitting with Mr. Jeff Dawson, newly appointed president of the United States for the NBL. Mr. Daryl Stewart, veteran, referee, and the NBL arbitrator, and the great national competitor, Mr. Dean Piles. And we'll be back with them in just a few minutes. I do have some shout-outs tonight, and I'm real excited about some of these shout-outs to talk about some upcoming events that the Sport Karting Museum is involved with and to talk about them. My first one is coming up just less than a month away. It's the Bill Wallace Superfoot World Championship, April 13th and 14th, Cleveland, Ohio, promoted by Mr. Don DeVries and Richard McClain. This is Bill Wallace's personal event. He'll be there, autographed. Sport Karting Museum will be there, and an incredible group of competitors traveling from all across the country, and that's in Cleveland, Ohio. For more information, contact Don DeVries or Richard McClain on Facebook. Think coming up. Wow, this is going to be a great one, okay? April the 21st, a week later, James Cashin is celebrating his 8th degree graduation along with Mr. J. Pat Burleson's birthday celebration. With some of the special guests that I know that are coming in are Bob Thunder Thurman, George Clark, Bob Wall, Joe Corley, Jeff Smith. The Sport Karting Museum will be there. Just an incredible group of fighters from all across the country celebrating this ambassador's celebration, Mr. Jamie Cashin, who's done so much for not only the Sport Karting Museum, but for a lot of people in America in the sport of martial arts. Then, coming up May the 12th at Gillies in Dallas, Texas, will be our friends Wes Melton putting on his championship, the Lone Star Eagle Karate Championship. For more information, you can contact him directly at Wes Melton on Facebook. And July 1st and the 3rd, we'll be at the Super Show in Vegas. It's the Bellagio. We'll have a great booth there, and we're excited about having Jim Buten, my special guest, to be there signing autographs and putting this book out. This is an amazing show, the largest martial arts and veteran show in the world, literally. August 3rd, we're back at the Who's Who Banquet in Martial Arts in Washington, D.C. Great guests like Danny Severin, Cynthia Rothrock, Linda Denman, the great John Chung, and Dana Abbott on the new cover of Black Belt Magazine will be there doing their seminars. September 28th and 29th, we'll be coming back to Living Legends. That'll be Kata Wars, Bubba Kumite, Darlene McPherson's Women's Symposium, and the great Mikey Rowe Morse Celebrity Roast. But tonight, you know, I'd like to make a shout out to a couple of things that are good for me, and that is making my schools better. And, you know, one of the things I do is I look on the internet and also in communication. Different groups to put together different formulas to make schools better. So when people call me, I can lead them the right direction. Well, you know, I found this group, and, you know, it's really cool about this group. Two particular men that are part of my life that I met them accidentally in the elevator at the Super Grands in Atlantic City. And I'm talking about Mr. Jeff Dunn and Mr. Scott Doloff. Now, they work with a company called Rainmaker. And I'm going to do a plug for them tonight because, you know, it's really cool. They were just kids when I ran into the elevator with Scott Hogarth and I did. But I remember Jeff telling me this story a few months ago, and it really made a big smile on my face, which I have right now. But they do an amazing company, and I'd like to read an extra for their company. So if you're interested, you can contact them on Facebook on their page or contact them directly through their association, which is Rainmaker. You know, get more freedom with Rainmaker fast. Are you maximizing the results with Rainmaker? You're already using the core form, which is the contact entry, point of sale, attendance, you know, the appointment book, and of course, billing, otherwise known as the auto collect. But what next? There are so many different things to set up, and maybe you feel overwhelmed. That's okay. Take a deep breath and schedule just 30 minutes to activate these four steps, and you will improve your retention, enhance your business systems, and more revenue, and sign up more students without a lifting a finger. You know, the most important thing is that you do step one, and that's activate your automatic census survey. The value is in the low ratings. This tells you where you can step up and where you improve your process and systems. Step two, rate your NPS survey and schedule it for every 90 days. This survey will automatically score your members and let you have an idea of people that are going to churn or quit, as well as people that are likely to refer. Step three, create a new member kit. Profit generator. You will provide a consistent and automatic increase in your revenue. So step four, set up your SMS text messaging and activate your appointment reminder, and both the day before and the day of settings. This means more actual people show up for appointments, which means more people enroll faster. You want to know more? Get Rainmaker. Get done. That was our shout out for our business. And you know what? I got one shout out. This is going to be a fun one. You know, I do emails, and I did them for a while. This one really got me because I did a show a few weeks ago with Ashita Kim, and I got quite a few emails. In fact, I got my first set of 8 emails. I'd like to read one of them to you right now. This is from Abdul Judah Kistler, and he's from Desma, Iowa. Here we go. Professor Gary Lee, you talk too much. Ashita Kim interview, you were rude and misrepresenting Ashita Kim. And he said his name wrong over and over and over again. Well, you know what? I don't like you. And I don't like why you went after Frank Dukes. Frank Dukes is a Kumite champion. You know, he knocked out 58 men in one tournament. How dare you? You have a lot of nerve. Do your research. You know, you beat everyone. And learn to shut up. Listen. Well, I can tell you this. I got a talk show for a reason. One, because I talk. And two, I'm always going to say my feelings in my heart. And that night, yes, I did interview Ashita Kim, but I wanted to find out questions that my emailers sent me to ask, and that's what I did. So I make no apologies, and I hope you listen to the show. Thank you so much for listening to my shout-outs, and I hope you decide to come to some of the events I mentioned. We'll be there with our booth, and we always love to see new people. I'd like to bring back Mr. Daryl Stewart, Mr. Doss, and Mr. Files. Are you guys there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
What do you think about that email, Daryl? Pretty hardcore, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yep. That's just one, you know, but that's okay. I guess I do talk too much, huh?
No, not really.
Well, I want to throw some legends at you guys. And I'm going to start with Jeff, and then I go Mr. Piles, and I go Mr. Stewart, in that order. So, Jeff, your first legend I'm going to throw at you. And by the way, for the listeners who are listening for the first time, if you are, this is called the Legends Name Game. And this is where I say name, and you can talk about that person for, 2 to 3 minutes. And, the Sport Card Museum, I had their 2 bits. So, you ready, Jeff?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, your first one, Bill Viola.
All right, so Bill,
what are you laughing at? He's my friend, my buddy. What are you laughing at?
No, I know. It's just funny how you always throw Bill at me, so it's funny. Good friend of mine. What was that?
Did you win his tournament a few times?
Yes, I have. And I've helped run this tournament and several things like that. So Bill's a good friend of mine, and, we were both of us were in the same conference for several years as tournament promoters, and he always was a great a great friend of mine who really appreciated the way that I competed and the way that I competed as far as using martial arts in a creative way. So him and I always bond on that and we'll always be good friends. So,
when's his tournament this year?
I do not know. I have not heard anything about his tournament this year.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Okay, Mr. Stewart, I'm Mr. Piles. You ready?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Joe Lewis.
Well, I mean, what can I say about Joe Lewis? That being said, I mean, named world greatest fighter. To me, he was like a father figure, not just an instructor, but a confidant. And, you know, he always had you back, and he was all about loyalty. I mean, Grandmaster Lewis would tell people, if it's the hell with Dean Piles, then it's the hell with Joe Lewis. That's the kind of person Joe Lewis was. If he was for you, then he was for you, and you didn't have to worry about him stabbing you in the back. And that's something that's lost in the martial arts world today. And, you know, it's unfortunate that people have to go through that. But, you know, he was one that I was loyal to forever, as I am to you. And even to this day, when I compete, I call out his name and point to heaven, and I know that he's right there with me. So, it's just like I've said many times, I don't care who stands against me as long as I know God stands for me. And I always know that Grandmaster Lewis is right there on my shoulder grinning at me and slapping me in the shoulder with them big knuckles and laughing, that little laugh that he would do, because he knew what the outcome was going to be. And he would, you know, in his words, he'd be like, give him hell, you know. And, you know, so, I mean, I love him, always will. Instructor, mentor, father figure, friend. I mean, you know, he'll always be a big part of me and my organization.
Good job. Good answer. Amen. Rest in peace, Jeff. Okay, Mr. Stewart, I'm going to throw one at you. Firecracker.
Go ahead.
Mike Moore.
Oh, what a lady that is. She's not big in height and stuff, but she is fired up. That's a lady that's still spreading it all across the United States at her young age and looking good and always got a smile on the face. But she'll let you know straight up if she don't like something about it, she'll tell you.
Aren't you going to roast her?
What's that?
Aren't you going to be roasting her this year?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a great time seeing her. I always enjoy being with her and Dana and having a great time. They're such a good couple, and she is everything. I love that lady.
She is a good lady. Okay, Jeff Dawson, back to you, sir. I'm going to throw one at you that again, I really respect this young man. Bear Lobby.
See, I can just predict everything you're going to say.
I'm making you laugh tonight. I'm good.
I already know all these. All right, so Bear, another one of my best friends in the sport karate world. I was in his wedding, and, you know, I've been to his grand opening, been to his karate school to hang out, and he's been here with me for tournaments, all kinds of stuff. So, one of my best friends, someone who always pushed me as a competitor, and someone that I...
I know this answer from your viewpoint, because you competed against him and you're best friends. How is he a competitor? He's like, if you talk about his credentials, it's pretty cool, but how do you feel him as a competitor?
He actually, 2 years in a row, we tied for the Korean title, and so that was, you know, and we had to do our form on stage against each other. And then the next year we tied again. And so, yeah, I mean, he was one of my best competitors and someone who pushed me in a lot of different ways. And him and I were two of the few that really tried to push Korean forms in the NBL. And what was cool was that, you know, we had a streak going of, you know, the men's Korean champion winning the overall grand for, 3 or 4 years in a row, so it was pretty sweet.
That's cool.
Which you don't see in other leagues, you know, Korean and self-defense and soft style winning overall grand championships, especially in traditional. So, pretty cool.
That's cool. That is cool about the NBL. Hey, Mr. Piles, I'm going to hit you with one. one of our dear friends, and I know you're real close to him, but people don't talk about him enough because he was a great competitor. Dewey Earwood.
Mr. Earwood is awesome. You know, he's a man of God, and he's another guy that, you know, if he's got your back, he's got your back. You know, and he always holds a great competition. He's always in great spirits, and even though he's had some surgeries and some health issues here of lately, he has still been, with his crutches and even in a wheelchair, showing up at competitions across the United States and judging and helping and supporting the martial arts. And that's huge. I mean, that's something that everybody should look up to and inspire, because, you know, whether he was in a wheelchair or on a cane, he was there and representing and helping grow the sport and push it. And like I say, he was a tremendous, awesome weapons guy, forms guy. I mean, you know, he knows his stuff, and he's been doing it a long time. I've been going to his competition pretty much since he had a competition. So, you know, he watched me grow up through the years, so I'm sure he's got a lot he could say about me, because, you know, I've competed there since, you know, like the beginning of Dixieland. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. And we'll be there every year.
I remember meeting me back in the 70s when I was with Sam. Okay, I got three personal questions for each one of you, one each, and I'm gonna start with Mr. Stewart first, okay? And it's a personal question, so you answer it from your heart, okay? You've been involved with the Sport Karate Museum from the very beginning, and you're actually one of the original history generals. How important is the Sport Karate Museum archives and the work that we do yearly? And you've been involved, like I said, from the beginning. How important it is, you feel, for the new competitors coming up, Darryl?
Well, I think the Sports Karate Museum is all about saving the warriors one at a time, and talking and letting the younger people know about the people that was here before them and how the sport evolved and where they're at, and all of the stuff that they have now that we didn't have then. And it was the blood and guts day when I came up, and now all the rules and everything we got. And I think it's good, and for what you do, Professor Gary Lee, for the Sports Museum and so many people across the whole United States, the shows, the way you promote the people and bring it out. I mean, I think it's awesome. I think that, and I'm glad to be part of it. I'm glad to be a history general and do my small part of being in the organization with you and all the great history generals, such as the two other gentlemen that's on the show with us right now.
Well, I appreciate that so much, Darryl. It means a lot. Mr. Piles, my personal question for you. As a reigning national and world champion, I got a question that was brought up in the pre-interview that I want to bring up, and I want you to answer it for me, because it's personal, because you're not only a great competitor, you're my personal student. So I'm going to ask you a question that we didn't prepare for, but yet we prepared for it. You mentioned the other day in the pre-interview, you kept mentioning world championship. I've won this, I won that. And I appreciate that so much. But now there's so many different world championships in the country and so many different world championships in the world and so many world championships down the street and so many world championships around the block, and the ones that we don't even know about that's going to form next week. How does the general public distinguish one world champion from the other when most sports, almost all the sports, except for martial arts, only has one world champion? So how would you handle that?
Well, I mean, I don't think that the general public can really have an idea. And the neat thing about sport karate is that there's so many different things that you can't have just one world champion, because there's so many different levels of competition. And I mean levels, I mean so many different areas of competition that it's hard to just narrow it down. And the other day, I think you got me wrong when I didn't say I'm a world champion. I said I would like to be able to compete as a world-class competitor, or world-class competitors would like to be able to compete on multiple leagues. Not that I am a world-class competitor, but that world-class competitors want to compete in NBL, ask a different thing.
Dane, listen, brother. What I mean is that you've got people, I'm not saying NBL, but you've got people who have won world championships in as a brown belt, green belt, and whatever the amateur world championship, whatever. Let's say they've won a world championship, and they go around and tell people that they're a world champion. That's what I meant by that. You just can't go around. In general.
Oh, okay.
Because the general public, they're laughing at sport karate right now, of the world championships and all these black belt hall of fames. I don't care what people like you saying or not, they're laughing at us. And there's something I want to do about it. That's all I want to do.
That is true. And that's another reason I like the Sport Karate History Museum is because, you know, you just can't buy your way in and anybody just can't be in there. You actually have to be somebody. You can't just claim to be something. Everybody's researched and you are inducted on your merit and picked on your merit and what you've accomplished. And I think that I mean, I'm sure Mr. Dawson, Mr. Stewart will agree. There are lots of people that, I mean, this is my thing. If you show up at a world championship, there needs to be a lot of people in your division. I mean, you need to have people in your division, whether they've been eliminated through the year or, you know, at the competition. There is so many different places and people claim to be world champions, and then, you know, you see them and they're nothing. So what I would say to that is you can judge a world champion. I don't care what, and I've said this before, what certificates you have hanging on your wall that may – say your rank or may say you're a world champion. When I see you compete, I want to see something that makes me go, holy crap, man, that dude is awesome. And I think that's what sets world champions apart, and that's what we got to get back to. And that's what I said the other day. As martial artists, we need to be a group and unified in making sure that we weed out people that don't belong. I mean, because nowadays, let's just face it, anybody can claim to be a black belt, and these people that will go from being a black belt to giving themselves a fifth, sixth-degree black belt and just moving right up, saying they traded their style. And I think that in itself is another thing that hurts the sport are world champions.
That's another show, little brother. We'll talk about that.
That's what ties it in, that hurts world champions and everything.
Right.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm sure everybody will agree that's, you know, there's so many people that can claim it. But, you know, you just have to – I mean, in my opinion, there was two leagues that would give justified, honest-to-God world champions, which one was the NBL and one was NASCAR. And, I mean, now you have WACO and the WKC, and both those are doing – you know, they're doing remarkable as well. So, you know, you have a few out there that are legitimate, but you have – a bunch of them just hold a tournament, and that may be 15 people, and they call it a world championship.
Dean, 3 minutes, buddy. Okay. Mr. Doss, my personal question for you. If I was – okay, I'm not a new black belt, but I'm a black belt, and I want to go into a league, and I want to go into a strong league, and I've decided to put aside money and travel, why would I choose the NBL over any other league?
All right, so first, and I get this all the time, is most people, you know, again, my tournament, and again, just for what's going on with the league and me as the president, my tournament gets more people from outside, like NASCAR competitors come to my tournament, other leagues come to my tournament, and that is one of the ways that just shows there that people are going to, you know, I want everyone to understand that we're an open league and that we're accepting of everyone. Now, as far as the NBL, the key thing is that there's so many different levels to get up to it. We're not just top-heavy and just huge tournaments. There's something for every person, you know, a path to the championship. If you, you know, you can only afford just to do within your region, there's a way to do that, and I can guide you on how to do that. If you want to do just, you know, the nationals, then you can do that. If you want to travel all over and try these different areas and different conferences, that's what's great about the NBL is the way that it's set up. You can go to this Can-Am conference on the East Coast, and then if you want to go over to the West Coast or go to the Texas ones, you can do that. It's something different for everyone. The other thing is that we break up even all the way down from the junior competitors on style and forms. And I think that is something that is lost. You know, it's not just traditional. You mix in the Korean and Japanese, and you have a guy doing a Japanese form with high kicks and, you know, Korean style this and that. We are, you know, it's broken down the way it should be. So that way, when those competitors become adults and they compete in those divisions that are broken up into styles, they already know how it goes, you know. And that there's something for everyone. There's sets of fence. There's breaking. There's continuous firing. There's team forms. I mean, there's just so many things. And that other, even other bigger leagues don't offer. And so that's what I say. I mean, there's, for me, when I came in, when I was competing in another circuit, you could only do one form, one weapon, and one fighting. That was it. When I came to the NBL, it was just like, man, my mind was just like, I had such an open mind because there were people that were like hard style competitors trying to learn how to do soft style because they were just so intrigued to try new things. And I think that's what's awesome about the NBL is it gives you the format to try new stuff. You know, I mean, I don't think everyone expected to want to be a self-defense champion or whatever, or a choreographed fight. But you know what they saw is, hey, that's pretty cool. Let me go out there and try that. So I think that's what's great. It's unlimited on how many things you can do.
I share this with you. I remember before kata, I would break boards over my head, and I'd break boards. And when they finally did a breaking division, I was just enthralled. And I was excited about it, and then to get a seat, exciting. So, you know, I understand the excitement of that. Well, I want to thank you guys for being on the show tonight. And before I leave, I want to get some information on how to get in contact with you. So I'll first start with Mr. Piles. I know you teach elite combat. You teach armed forces. Tell me a phone number and web address that people can contact you in Florida.
They can go to our Facebook page. It's Grandmaster Piles Elite Combat Martial Arts. And we are in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, at 4 Racetrack Road. And we do, you know, I am the combatives instructor for the United States Special Forces, all branches come through our program. And study the Last Defense program, which is lethal assault survival tactics, as well as, you know, doing our MMA fighting, cage fighting, and obviously kickboxing with Grandmaster Lewis, and sport karate. And our phone number is air code 850-368-1552.
Okay, thank you, bro. Thank you. And Daryl, you just won the lottery, right? So you're going to pay airfare for about 100 people to fly to Hawaii and back, right?
Yes. Y'all hold your breath on that, okay?
You did win lottery. It's all true? All those rumors are true?
Yeah, right. I wish.
I thought they were true. I was going to call you up. I want to go back. I want to go to Hawaii. So anyway, Daryl,
we'll bring our surfboards if we go.
Hey, that's some work. We need a competition in Hawaii.
I had the only NBL tournament in Hawaii, and boys never let me have another one because it was all the blood and stuff, but that's another story. But anyway, Daryl, if you want to contact Daryl Stewart, contact him through the sportcaratemuseum.org or 713-483-0476, and I'll get in contact with him. Jeff, how do we get in contact with you? How do we get in contact to register for the Grand Slam, and how do we talk to you about getting involved in the NBL? Give me some numbers in the web back.
All right. So if you are on Facebook, you'll probably see me all over the place. I have at least one or two live shows every day as my way to give value to everyone as far as based on my tournament, the league, my school, myself. Grand Slam Martial Arts on Facebook. You can go to grandslammartialarts.com. I'm in Rustburg, Virginia, and you can contact me there. For the tournament, it's GrandSlamOpenNationals.com or Jeff Toss Grand Slam Open on Facebook. I do a live show every Friday about the tournament. You can go to that website to register for the Grand Slam Open Nationals, where you will see, I mean, the best of NBL, NASCA, WKU, WKA, WKC, WACO, all those guys. I'm trying to think of anything else. If you want to reach me for NBL, USA NBL Rankings, at gmail.com or FKIL rankings@gmail.com, or again, just message the National Blackout League Facebook page. So I'm all over the place. I'm really attainable. I hope everyone can reach me if they want to talk to me. and we're just excited to, positivity, guys. That's what I'm focused on.
Well, I'm so excited about having you on the show tonight, Mr. Doss. Jeff, as I've called you since you were nine, you're such a pleasure,
yes,
and to watch you grow up and be part of the new leadership of American sport martial arts, and I'm really proud of you. And Mr. Stewart, as always, I'm you're one of my best friends, and I'm looking forward to our road trip we're going to have together. It's going to be exciting, yeah, going down to James and stuff, and I appreciate your opinion always and what we're going to do for Mikey Rowe Moore this year. And Dean Piles, I love you. You're my student. I'll always cherish you and take care of you, and I want you to know that I appreciate your opinion, and I want you to know also that every time you walk into the ring, you walk in the spirit of Mr. Lewis and myself, and I appreciate that so much. With that said, we'll have our next show next Tuesday with Mr. Buddy Hudson, entrepreneur and part of the Taekwondo community. It'll be a fun show, but this has been a really fun show for me tonight personally, because I am and always will be an NBO animal, and the NBO is not dead, and it's very much alive. And we proved it tonight. So God bless everybody. We'll see you next Tuesday. Good night, Mr. Piles. Good night, Mr. Stewart. Good night, Mr. Doss. Aloha.
Yes, sir.
And mahalo.
Good night, sir. I'll have you.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys. Be safe.
Oh.